Okay. So how'd you get involved as an instructor in the workshops here at Fur Peace? Did Yorma seek you out, or vice versa?
Yorma saw me on TV a few times. He saw some documentary things that the CMT played that were made called True Stories. And it was a story of my life, and there was a lot of footage of me playing live, and there was some footage of me and Chet together. And then he saw the documentary on Chet's life, and I was in that. And so he contacted us, and we just took it from there.
Right.
And, you know, you don't do a guitar camp for the money. Mm-hmm. You do it because you want to teach and do this, and it actually is really good. I find that when I'm touring here, when I know I've got guitar camp coming up, even though it's pretty full on days, and you don't play every night, but you end up playing all the time anyway, but I'm not required to play every night. There's one concert and there's 3 days of teaching.
Yeah. Must be pretty flattering hearing these guys play your stuff note for note. They sound pretty good.
Yeah, they do. Well, half those guys are pals of mine, have become real pals of mine through coming to shows, and then four of the people who enrolled were here last time, and they came back.
Okay.
And they've really improved. And their attitude is better, their enthusiasm is better, and it's...
Is it hard to switch gears from being a performer to a teacher?
No. I'm a teacher and a performer at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoy it. And the thing that I love about it is that everyone's so individual, and I enjoy to spend time with each one individually. I don't actually... when I do talking and demonstrating, I demonstrate to the class and I talk to the class about certain things and all that. But then when it comes time for actual teaching, it becomes one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
I take them away individually and work with them. I record stuff for them. And I give them something to take away, to work on, until the next time I see them. And that's how I do it, because they're all different. You got one guy who just can play a few, you know, Robert Johnson tunes and has never played a Chet Atkins tune or whatever. And you got other guys who are so into my stuff that they're trying to play it note for note.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to help them out with that. And then you got other guys who are into Chet who want to get better. And maybe there's always one guy who's like a singer-songwriter who wants to be able to finger-pick, and he can't, you know? And so you start him off with Don McLean tunes, and, you know, I try to read each one individually, and rather than saying, you will do this because I'm the boss, that doesn't work with people, you know? And so that's how I approach it.
Okay. Well, speaking of teaching, you and Chet did a song on the day the finger-pickers took over.
Mel Bay.
Oh, to Mel Bay. It started me wondering about a couple things. Did you have any kind of formal guitar training?
No.
Or are you completely self-taught?
I'm self-taught, but I've begged and stolen and borrowed from everybody and made it mine, kind of thing, you know. When I was a kid, my elder brother, he was the lead player, and he had an incredible set of ears. I mean, he would hear something on the radio and literally play it back. He could tell what the chords were and all that long before I could. And I'm talking, I'm five and he's seven, and he would learn something. And then he'd say, okay, the chords go like this, now, blah, 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 and then I would come up with my rhythm part, you know. And then as we got older, when we got into our teens, and I went off and played with other people, and then we came back together again. By that time, my ear was fairly developed, and I was playing a lot of songs. I could hear a lot of things, and he would learn new licks. You know, he would get a Roy Buchanan record or a Merle Haggard record and cop the licks from it, and then he'd call me up and say, okay, pick up your guitar, and he said, now, it goes like this, and he'd tell me what the lick was over the phone, stuff like that. So my brother really helped me out a lot. He was a very generous teacher. You know, he was a very generous person to hand it all on all the time. You
What's
know?
He doing now?
He's playing guitar. That's what he does.
Mm.
He's a great, great player. Plays electric guitar. He can play acoustic.
You guys ever play together?
Yeah, we play. We made an album together called Terra Firma, which is a John Jorgensen song. We played that on the 2000 Olympics on the closing ceremony. That's the song that I chose to play.
The other thing I was wondering about that song,
mm-hmm.
You had to hire a guy to play badly.
Oh, yeah. Now, what we did...
Has your playing evolved to the point where it's impossible for you to play badly?
Well, convincingly, absolutely, to be honest. Chet and I both had a go at playing that badly.
Uh-huh.
And neither of us said, we just went, it's not convincing, you know. I'll tell you what I did. I got the engineer, Clark Hagen, we used to call him Hack Hagen,
I got hacked to, I took Chet's telly off the wall and his little Fender Deluxe amp and got a real weedy sound. And then I said to him, do you know Red River Valley? And he said, no. I said, right, sit down and try to work it out. And while he was playing, I just recorded him on a DAT. And I found the best passage of the worst playing I could find, and I dropped it in onto the master tape.
That's great. On the same CD, Chet, did Chet write News from the Outback for you? You obviously wrote the tune Mr. Guitar for him.
Yeah. Now, he already had an idea. He had an idea of the tune, right? And he was playing that in an open G tuning. I played along, and I played the second part and doubled the melody in a normal guitar tuning. And I brought the didgeridoo into it and all that kind of stuff, and the Aboriginal sticks and
kind of a drone-like.
And I did that with the bass as well. I kind of droned it as well to give it that sort of Aboriginal type flavour. He actually came up with the title News from the Outback, and because he was constantly interested and asking questions about it, and he'd always wanted to go there, but it was too late for him to travel that far. I bought him books back from Australia, they're still at his house, of the Red Centre of Australia and the Aboriginal culture and stuff like that, and he was always fascinated by it. He didn't write that for me. He had the melody and he had the idea. And he said, I wanted to write an Outback tune, you know. And he originally called it Bad News from the Outback. And I said, Chet, you don't want to hear Bad News from the Outback. The only bad news you're going to get from the Outback is if someone's died. Other than that, you're not going to get any bad news. And he said, really? I said, yeah, you better drop the bad. So it became News from the Outback. And Tiptoes Through the Bluegrass was a title I gave that song. He sent the tape to me so I could learn the tune and everything, and it had Bluegrass Waltz written on it. And I said, oh, this is a real quirky little song. Why don't we give it a better title? And he said, well, it's just a Bluegrass Waltz. I said, how about Tiptoes Through the Bluegrass? And he said, great, that's it. So I gave that song the title, you know.
So who do you think are some of the best unknown guitar talents out there?
Stephen Bennett, by a long shot. Pete Hunlinger. Pat Bergeson. There are quite a few. There are a lot, in fact. There's a couple of guys in Australia who are just killer. I know nobody knows them. I'm trying to think who they are. There's a guy named Brett Wood. There's a young fellow named Andrew Rigglesworth. There's a guy from Italy called Daniele Benzani who plays really well, really well.
These are unknowns.
Hmm?
These are unknowns. I don't know.
Yep, that's right.
But I'll know them soon.
Well, I was just talking about this today, Alan. I was saying to the people in my class, they said, you know, we were talking about fame and fortune and all that stuff that goes with it, and I said, okay, so how do people get known? And I said, people come to me and say, look, I'm really good. How can I get where you are, kind of thing? And I said, if you're really good, then I'm going to hear about you. Mm-hmm. And if you really, truly are good, and I want to hear you, I'm going to talk about you, and I'm going to tell somebody, this guy's good, you should give him a go. Or I'll say, you should come on the road with me and play to my audience and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I've done that with so many players. People have done it for me. Eric Clapton did it for me in Australia. It was great. And so that's how it goes. So it's kind of like this thing of, well, how do you get to there? Well, you've got to have something good which gets people interested in the first place, you know. A guy said, well, how do I get on blah, blah, blah show? And I said, get good.
That's simple.
That's simple. Get good.
So in the liner notes of Only, you mentioned James Taylor as an inspiration to your play, and I think I hear his influence a little in your song Since We Met.
Yes.
And JT isn't usually mentioned by guitar virtuosos like
you.
I
love his guitar playing. I love his song.
Because he doesn't play a lot of, you know, flashy, jaw-dropping licks, so what's so great about JT?
Yes, he does. JT plays so well that everything he plays knocks me out. It can be the simplest thing, but he has, in my mind, some of the best things to play and the best feel. When he's playing, it's the minimum of minimum effort, maximum effect. He's a classic example of that. You have a listen to that, you know, the little introduction he plays to that song, Like Everyone She Knows. Mm-hmm. You know, the da-da-da, da-da, da-da-da, da.
Just a little musical.
A little musical interlude. You try and play that thing. Mm-hmm. That's hard, man, to play it as good as that. But you go right back to his early stuff.
Yeah.
Back to the early 70s. He was really good then.
He was one of the first to do it.
Yeah. And his time is so incredible. And you watch it, you watch him perform, and he owns the time. You know, he is time. He's great. But the thing that I always thank him for his inspiration as a player, but more as a songwriter, and just as a person himself. He inspires me in every way. And I can hear his influence in everything I do, you know?
I hear a lot of it, too.
Yeah.
You must have been in your 20s when you played guitar on the big pop hit Lost in Love by Air Supply.
Yeah.
And although that clearly wasn't the kind of music you were destined to play, can you recall the feeling of those years? Did you think you had arrived at that point?
Oh, no, those guys were all friends of mine, and I was they actually didn't pay me for playing on that. I did them a favor by coming in and helping out, because they were just starting.
How about that?
How about that? And then I played on Every Woman in the World, All Out of Love, American Girls, and all that stuff on that whole album. And I got a credit there that said, additional guitar, Tommy Emmanuel. I did all the guitars on that.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah. The other two guys, well, the two guys in the band, who are good pals of mine, David Moyse and Rex Goh, were both pupils of mine at the time, mm-hmm. you see. But the reason I got booked to do that was, you've got to understand, the song Lost in Love was separate to the others. That was their big song, and they recorded it, and then they re-recorded it again later. But I played on the first and the second version of it. So the first version was a favor, was a demo. They got their record deal with Clive Davis, and bang, they had millions of dollars to spend on this album. Mm-hmm. Right? They had a big producer from America, Robbie Porter, who actually produced my first three albums. And Robbie's known me since I was a little kid, and he used to book me because I could come in and play a rhythm part, and then I could double it exactly. And he would put my guitars in stereo, and there was this beautiful rhythm like that. And it would be like 10 minutes done. Okay, next song, boom, boom, I'd change strings quickly, you know, perfectly in tune, ready to go. Okay, next take, I would get a rhythm part together. There it was, bang. Okay, that's the left-hand run. Same one on the right. I'd remember all the little skips, every little thing I did. So it was this stereo guitar thing, and I knew that's what he loved. And then he'd get me back in to do overdubs and come up with ideas on the electric guitar. And so he booked me because he knew that he could just... He would put the song up, and I'd go, no problem, and I knew what to do. You know, I didn't labor over anything. I knew exactly where I was going. And so that's why I did that. As far as your questions, I'm digressing, I'm sorry. But as far as your question about I knew I arrived, I was already doing about 40 dates a week. Mm. I mean, I barely had time to sleep. Mm-hmm. I was recording on everyone's records. That was just yet another one.
You know, I was checking out your tour schedule at your website, and it made me feel personally exhausted to see how many dates you're playing over the next couple of months.
Yeah.
You must love your job to put that much energy in.
November is interesting. It's 30 shows in November. I just did 29 shows in a row in Australia, and I had one day off with my mother and family. But I love it.
Yeah, that's sort of...
I'm trying to get good.
Yeah, but I don't think you have to worry about that. That kind of leads into my next question.
Mm-hmm.
Most of your early life was in Australia.
Yes.
Your career is based out of Nashville. Your present home in England, is that true?
It has been. I've just moved to Nashville.
Oh, okay. That'll make things easier.
I'll still be hardly there.
Yeah. Yeah, after looking at your tour schedule, I understand that. There must be a personal price of being a bit rootless and having that kind of schedule.
Yeah, and I'm paying it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost, and my wife has met someone else, and we're getting divorced.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, after 15 years. But I can understand, because I can't stop what I'm doing and just stay home.
Yeah.
And I can't make enough money to just stay in England, mm-hmm. and support the family there. I don't want to burn out my touring in England. I want that to be
building and building. And if you keep touring, you're going to wear it out,
yeah.
right, in England or and anywhere. So
well, your kids must understand you're doing this not only for posterity, but for them, too.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My eldest daughter had a lot of trouble this past few months, or this past Christmas, really, because at that time we had split up, and it was difficult. And that's the kind of price it takes. But, you know, personally, I don't feel that I could ever make her happy, and I don't feel that she has really made me happy, because she hasn't seen me play a show in 8 years,
mm-hmm.
which means that she's not interested in what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So, and I've learned a lot. I've learned that compatibility really means something.
Right.
You know? So.
Well, I mean, you were destined to do this job. It's not.
Oh,
like
there's
you,
no question
like
of that.
I
can't not do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
How could I maintain this level of emotion and this level of output if it wasn't driven by something greater than me?
Right.
You dig?
Mm-hmm. I dig that.
Yeah. I'm connected to some mansion that's pulling me along. I'm not pushing anything. I'm having a ride.
I think your listeners know that too.
Huh?
I think your listeners know that too. You're connected to something.
That's true.
Now, you tune one of your guitars slightly up and one slightly down. Why?
The little guitar that I use on Only, I used the two guitars on Only, the one I tune down has big strings. It's 58 to 13, and I tune it down almost a tone. It's like three quarters of a tone, because it's a different sound, and it makes you play in a different way, and it's good for certain songs, right? The reason I tune the other one up is purely because the guitar feels and sounds so great above concert pitch. And when I go out there to play, and I'm absolutely spanking it and going for it, I don't want that guitar to be going in and out of tune too much. You know, I want that guitar to hold its tuning,
mm-hmm.
even when I'm really bending it and stuff. So, I do that, and it just makes the guitar that little bit brighter. And you know what? If somehow it's a little brighter to your ear, to the listener's ear. It's like, wow, what is that? There's something about that sound. Sometimes players who have been playing for years go, what is this? There's something about your sound. It's actually the tuning. It's just brighter, you know? It's 4:44 when I play most shows. Like tonight I'll be at 4:44. I have been at 4:46 with a dead flat neck, you know? And it's on the verge of everything buzzing. It's just like right on the edge. That's how low I have my action. But I have it tight, the tuning pulled up.
Do you ever use alternate tunings?
Yeah. Yeah. I use a C tuning in a song called Run a Good Race.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight I'll play a couple of new songs with a G6 tuning. And that's on my third guitar.
Okay. So what can you tell us about your next recording?
I can tell you that it's not all original songs, and there are some surprises on this album. It's about, let me see, there's 15 or 16 songs on the album, I can't remember. There's a lot of new songs, of course, a lot of new original songs. And I've done what I would call, I've tried to come up with definitive new versions of songs that everyone plays the same, like Windy and Warm. I've re-recorded Windy and Warm in a kind of real funky late 60s Jerry Reed sort of style, which I really like. I like that style. Although, you know, I wouldn't say it is actually Jerry's style, it's more my style, but there's a lot of it influenced by him. And I've done a remake of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, Mona Lisa, and the song that I recorded with Chet that he wrote called To Be or Not To Be, that's always been a duet, and I wanted to make a definitive kind of solo guitar version for the people who are into what I do and want to be able to play it. So I do the key change, and then I improvise a part and keep the whole thing going. And I'll play it tonight.
Okay,
you'll hear it.
Look forward to it.
Yeah.
So this is going to be on Favorite Nation?
I hope so.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what's going on at the moment.
Great.
You're going to hear a lot of new stuff tonight.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate your help.
Yeah. I'll let you know when this is...